This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Chapter 1. The Unseen Healer. The scent of bloodroot and silver balm clung to Anne's hands, a permanent perfume. She moved through the infirmary like a whisper, a shadow that tidied bandages and soothed fevers without ever being truly seen. Invisibility was a cloak she had sewn for herself, thread by painful thread. It was safe. It was quiet. Underneath her tunic, where the rough fabric met her shoulder, an old scar puckered her skin. A silver-white testament to a past rejection she never spoke of, a brand of unworthiness. Outside the sterilized quiet of her world, the pack buzzed with news. Alpha Kale needed a Luna. The whispers were everywhere, a frantic, hopeful hum. The other nurses spoke of it in hushed, excited tones, each woman imagining herself in the role. Anne just cleaned her instruments with sharp, angry motions. A Luna. Fate's cruelest joke. Why would the moon goddess ever bless someone disposable? Someone broken? It was a fantasy for girls who hadn't learned how sharp the world's teeth were. He needs a strong mate, someone from a powerful bloodline. Lyra, a junior nurse, sighed dreamily, leaning against a supply cabinet. Someone to stand beside him at the equinox summit. Anne didn't look up from the poultice she was grinding. He needs a political shield, she muttered, her voice low and rough. Not a soulmate. Because love in their world wasn't about hearts. It was about power, territory, and strength. Lyra frowned, the fantasy punctured. You're always so bitter. Am I? Or am I just awake? Anne thought, but she said nothing. Bitterness was just another layer of her cloak. It kept people at a distance. It kept her from hoping. The infirmary door swung open with a heavy thud that startled them both. It wasn't a patient. It was Marius, the Alpha's beta, a wolf built of granite and scowls, his presence sucking the very air from the room. His eyes, dark and serious, scanned the space, passing over Lyra, over the beds of injured pack members, and landed directly on Anne. The silence that followed was heavy, deafening. Marius never came here. He certainly never looked at her. Anne, he said. His voice was a gravelly command, not a request. The Alpha requires your presence. At the estate. Now. Every head in the infirmary turned. Every eye fixed on her. The sudden, unwanted attention felt like 1,000 tiny needles piercing her skin. Her heart hammered against her ribs, a frantic bird trapped in a cage of her own making. She wanted to shrink, to vanish, to become nothing more than a ripple in the air. But Marius's gaze was a physical weight, pinning her in place. Her carefully constructed invisibility had just been ripped away, and all she could feel was the cold dread of being exposed. This unwanted attention could mean only one thing: trouble. She wiped her hands on her apron, the familiar scent of herbs doing nothing to calm the storm brewing inside her. The beta just stood there, waiting, his impatience a palpable force. Anne could only nod, her throat too tight for words. As she followed him out, she could feel the burning stares of the other nurses on her back, their whispers already starting to chase after her. Why her? What had she done? The walk to the Alpha's estate felt like a march toward an execution, each step confirming her deepest fear. Being seen was dangerous, and she had just been spotted. The quiet life she had fought so hard to build was about to be shattered, and she had no idea why. Chapter 2. The Weight of an Alpha's Gaze. The Alpha's estate was nothing like the infirmary. Here, the air was thick with the scent of old leather, beeswax, and a suffocating ancient power. Dark wood drank the light from the tall, arched windows, and the silence wasn't peaceful. It was predatory. Anne felt small, insignificant, a stray lamb brought into the lion's den. Her plain, homespun tunic felt rough and cheap against the polished floors and rich tapestries depicting great hunts of old. Her only goal was to do what she was told and escape, disappear back into the comfortable gray of her life. She was just a servant here, brought to help with the ceremonial dinner for the pack elders. Nothing more. Then he arrived. Alpha Kyle didn't just enter a room. He consumed it. He was a storm of raw power held in human form, his presence a low hum of danger that vibrated in the air. He was tall, broad-shouldered, with hair as black as a moonless night and eyes the color of molten gold. But it wasn't his power that struck Anne. It was the crushing weight of the burden he carried. It was there in the hard line of his jaw, in the deep-seated weariness in his eyes. He looked less like a king and more like a warrior who hadn't slept in 1,000 years. He moved with a coiled grace, every muscle tense, as if fighting a war no one else could see. What could possibly wound a man with so much power? Anne kept her head down, her focus locked on the silver pitcher in her hands. She moved along the table, refilling goblets, her footsteps silent. Be invisible, be forgotten. But as she reached the alpha, her hand trembled. Just a little. A single traitorous drop of deep red wine splashed onto the pristine white tablecloth beside his plate. Mortification, hot and sharp, shot through her. Forgive me, Alpha, she whispered, her voice barely audible. She expected a sharp rebuke, a dismissal. Instead, there was only silence, a heavy, loaded stillness that made the whole room hold its breath. Slowly, she dared to lift her eyes and found his golden gaze fixed on her. It wasn't angry. It was intense, searching, as if he were looking past her face, past her fear, and straight into the fractured pieces of her soul. For a single, terrifying heartbeat, the world fell away. There was no dining hall, no elders, no pitcher of wine. There was only the magnetic pull of his eyes, a force of nature that threatened to pull her apart. She felt a strange, unwelcome flutter in her chest, a bizarre mix of fear and something else. Something warm and dangerous. Kyle's control visibly cracked. A flicker of surprise, of raw shock, crossed his features before a mask of cold authority slammed back into place. He gave a curt, almost imperceptible nod, a silent dismissal to the elders who were now watching with undisguised curiosity. They rose, murmuring their farewells, shuffling out of the grand hall until only she and the Alpha remained. The silence he left in his wake was more intimidating than any shout. His eyes never left hers. You, he said. The word was not loud, but it resonated deep in her bones, a low rumble of thunder. Stay. Chapter 3. A 30-day contract. Kyle's private study was a cage made of shadows and secrets. A fire crackled in the hearth, its hungry flames casting dancing silhouettes across walls lined with leather-bound books. It should have been warm, but the air was cold, charged with an unspoken tension that made Anne's skin prickle. She stood in the center of the room, feeling exposed, her hands clasped tightly to stop them from shaking. He hadn't spoken since they'd left the dining hall. He just watched her from behind his massive oak desk, his golden eyes narrowed, calculating. What does he want? The question screamed in her mind. Finally, he spoke, his voice void of any warmth. I have a problem, and you are going to be the solution. He didn't waste time with pleasantries. He was direct, brutal. He explained the situation with the cold precision of a general outlining a battle plan. Rival alphas were circling his territory like vultures. They sensed a weakness, because he was mateless, because he had no heir. The upcoming Equinox summit would be a bloodbath of political maneuvering, and he needed to present a united, powerful front. He needed a Luna. I need a shield, he stated, leaning forward, his gaze pinning her to the spot. A temporary one. I am offering you a contract. Be my Luna for 30 days. In exchange, I will give you enough wealth to leave this pack and start a new life anywhere you choose. You will be protected, you will be secure. After the summit, you will be free. The words hung in the air, so absurd, so utterly insane, that a choked, bitter laugh escaped Anne's lips before she could stop it. Her? His Luna? The idea was a cruel joke, a mockery of everything she was. A disposable girl from the infirmary, marked by a scar of rejection, chosen to play the part of the most revered woman in the pack. He might as well have asked a sparrow to pretend to be an eagle. The universe had a sick sense of humor. But then he mentioned the money, the freedom, a life away from the pitying glances, a chance to be someone else, someone whole. The offer was a poison-laced apple, a temptation that spoke directly to the deepest, most desperate part of her soul. It was a way out. "Why me?" she finally managed to ask, her voice a thin, reedy whisper. The question was a challenge, a plea, a demand all in one. Why choose the most broken piece on the board? Kyle's expression didn't soften. He stared at her, and for a fleeting, almost imperceptible moment, the cold mask of the alpha slipped. She saw a flicker of something raw beneath, a deep, aching vulnerability that mirrored her own. The sight of it stole her breath. "Because," he said, and his voice was a low, rough rasp, like stones grinding together. "You're quiet. You stay in the shadows. No one would ever suspect this is anything but a true fated mate bond, because no one would ever believe I would choose you for real." The insult landed like a physical blow, knocking the air from her lungs. It confirmed her deepest, darkest fear. She was disposable. Unwanted. But in a strange, twisted way, his brutal honesty made the arrangement feel safe. It was a deal built on her perceived worthlessness. There would be no emotion, no pretense of affection. It was a lie, and they both knew it. It was a business transaction, and because of that, she knew she could survive it. She could play a part for 30 days. For a chance at freedom, she could endure anything. Looking into the depths of his lonely, golden eyes, she saw not a monster, but a man trapped in a cage just like her. "I accept," she said, sealing her fate. Chapter 4, The Hollow Vow. The ceremony was a lie. Anne felt the dishonesty in the cold night air, a bitter tang that mixed with the smoke from the flickering torches. She stood in the center of the pack's ancient stone circle, a borrowed ceremonial gown hanging awkwardly on her frame. It was all for show, the solemn elders, the sacred vows, the hundreds of pairs of eyes watching her. Whispers slithered through the crowd like snakes in the grass. "She's a nobody. An infirmary girl. Look at her. She's terrified." They weren't wrong. Humiliation was a cold, heavy stone in her stomach, but beneath it, a strange, steely resolve had formed. "Survive this. Keep your heart locked away. It's just 30 days. Kyle stood beside her, a figure carved from moonlight and shadow. He was untouchable, his expression unreadable. To the pack, they must have looked like the perfect alpha pair, a powerful leader and his chosen mate. What a bitter joke. The High Elder raised his hands, his voice echoing in the sudden silence. "If any wolf objects to this union, let them speak now or forever hold their peace." A beat of silence, then another. Anne almost allowed herself to breathe. "I object!" The voice was sharp, laced with contempt. A wolf named Valerius, one with a minor claim to a powerful bloodline, stepped forward. "She is not of noble blood. She has no standing, no strength. She is unfit to be Luna." The accusation hung in the air, sharp and ugly. Anne flinched, the words striking her like stones, confirming every terrible thought she had about herself. She braced for Kale to agree, to end this farce. Instead, a low growl rumbled from his chest, a sound so deep and predatory it made the very ground vibrate. Before she could even process it, he moved, stepping partially in front of her, a living shield. His golden eyes blazed with a fire that was not part of the act. "She is my choice," Kale's voice cut through the clearing, each word an iron decree. "Her strength is not for you to judge. She is your Luna, your alpha female. You will show her the respect she is owed." The authority in his voice was absolute. It was terrifying. Valerius paled and stumbled back into the crowd, immediately silenced. The rest of the ceremony passed in a blur. Anne was shaken to her core. That wasn't part of the contract. That raw, possessive protection, it felt intensely, frighteningly real. It cut straight through the walls she had so carefully built around her heart, leaving her confused and breathless. Much later, the heavy door of their assigned chambers clicked shut behind them, sealing them in an even more suffocating silence. This was it. The wedding night. A charade within a charade. The air crackled with unspoken tension. He was her mate in name, but he stood across the vast room, his back rigid. He wouldn't even look at her. "This will be your room," he said, his voice strained, rough. "I will sleep elsewhere." He turned and left without another word. The finality of the closing door was like a slap. His restraint felt like a rejection, a cold, brutal confirmation of the terms of their deal. "You are nothing to me." And yet, it was also a relief, a gift, because this cold distance kept her safe. It kept the lines clear. Still, a small, treacherous part of her ached with a strange, hollow disappointment. What in the world was wrong with her for feeling that? Chapter 5. The Council of Whispers. The Luna Council chamber was designed to intimidate. Severe-looking female elders, their faces etched with the pack's history, sat behind a long, curved table of dark wood. They were the keepers of tradition, the guardians of the old ways, and their collective gaze was sharp enough to strip flesh from bone. This was Anne's first official test, and she walked into the room feeling like a mouse summoned for an audience with a parliament of owls. They intended to expose her as a fraud, to prove to the entire pack that Alpha Kale had made a fatal mistake. "You have no training in diplomacy, girl," sneered Alara, the eldest of the council, her voice dry as dust. "How would you handle a territorial dispute with the Blood Moon Pack?" "What is your understanding of the ancient trade pacts?" another challenged. Anne's hands were clammy. Her mind went blank. She knew nothing of these things. She opened her mouth to admit defeat, but then a different question was asked. "A plague is sweeping the lower valley, sickening the pups. The Alpha is away. What is your first decree?" The shift in topic was like a key turning in a lock. This, she understood, this was not about power, but about care. Her voice, though quiet, was steady. "I would quarantine the sick. I would organize the healers to brew silver balm and feverbane tea. I would go myself because the pack's most vulnerable should see their Luna is not afraid to stand with them in the shadows." She spoke from the heart, her years in the infirmary giving her a different kind of wisdom. One of empathy, not of politics. She surprised them. More importantly, she surprised herself. Unbeknownst to her, Kale watched from a shadowed alcove just beyond the chamber doors. He remained silent, as tradition dictated, but he heard every word. He saw a quiet strength in her, a fierce compassion he had never anticipated. This was not the timid, invisible woman he thought he'd chosen. Feeling a tiny, fragile flicker of pride, Anne left the council chamber. But her relief was short-lived. A figure blocked her path in the corridor, Alpha Marcus of the Stone River Pack, a guest at the estate. He was a wolf with a predator's smile and cruel, assessing eyes. "An interesting choice for a Luna," Marcus sneered, his voice an oily drawl. His gaze deliberately dropped to her collar, to the spot where her tunic might slip and reveal her scar. "So very fragile. I wonder how you will hold up under real pressure." Before Anne could find her voice to respond, a blur of motion exploded from the shadows. Kale. He was suddenly there, his body radiating a heat that was pure fury. His hand clamped down on Marcus's shoulder, the sound of straining fabric sharp in the quiet hall. A low, guttural growl ripped from Kale's chest, a sound that was not human. It was the warning of a possessive wolf. His eyes were no longer molten gold. They were blazing suns. "You will not speak to her again," he snarled, his voice a deadly whisper. "You will not look at her again. Do you understand me?" Marcus, an alpha in his own right, seemed to shrink under the sheer ferocity of Kale's rage. He nodded quickly, yanking his shoulder free before beating a hasty retreat. Kale stood there for a moment, his chest heaving, his wolf fighting for control just beneath his skin. This wasn't an alpha protecting his political asset. This was personal. This was possession. And that raw, untamed display terrified Anne more than any threat Marcus could have made. Chapter 6, The Scent of Blood and Rain. The ambush was brutally efficient. One moment, their patrol was moving through a forest path slick with rain. The next, the world erupted into a chaos of snarling and steel. Rogues. At least a dozen of them, moving with a coordination that spoke of a hidden master. Kale fought like a demon, a whirlwind of controlled violence, but he was outnumbered. Anne watched in horror as a rogue's blade, coated in what smelled like silver, sliced deep into Kale's arm. He roared, a sound of pain and fury as he dispatched the attacker, but the damage was done. Blood, dark and alarmingly fast, flowed from the wound. When the last rogue had fled or fallen, a tense silence descended, broken only by the dripping rain and Kale's ragged breaths. His guards rushed to secure the perimeter, but Anne only had eyes for him. The cold, intimidating alpha was gone. In his place was a wounded male, leaning heavily against a tree, his face pale beneath a sheen of sweat. Instinct took over. The part of her that was a healer, the only part of herself she had ever trusted, surged forward. All her fear, all her confusion about their arrangement, simply vanished. There was only the wound and the wolf who bore it. "Hold still," she commanded, her voice surprisingly firm. She ripped a long strip from the hem of her own cloak, the rough fabric a poor substitute for proper bandages, but it would have to do. Kneeling in the mud beside him, she gently took his arm. His skin was hot, feverish. Her touch was sure and steady as she pressed the makeshift bandage against the gash, applying pressure. The world narrowed to the two of them. The scent of rain, damp earth, and the metallic tang of his blood filled her senses. He watched her, his breathing evening out slightly, his golden eyes dark and stormy. He didn't pull away. In the middle of the dark, wet forest, with danger still lurking in the shadows, an intimacy sparked between them. It was raw, unspoken. He was vulnerable, and she was his healer. Slowly, his uninjured hand came up, his calloused fingers gently brushing a rain-soaked strand of hair from her cheek. His touch was like a lightning strike, a jolt of pure fire that shot through her veins. His thumb traced the line of her jaw, a feather-light caress that made her shiver. He leaned in, his gaze fixed on her lips. His own parted slightly. This was it. The kiss she had been confusedly dreading and wanting. It was inevitable. But it never happened. With a sharp, shuddering gasp, Kale pulled back as if he'd been burned. A war raged in his eyes, a battle between a raw, undeniable hunger and a deep, soul-crushing fear. His control slammed back into place, a wall of ice colder and harder than ever before. "The bleeding, it's slowing," he said, his voice strained and hoarse. "Thank you." The dismissal was a blade to her heart, leaving her dizzy, aching, and utterly bewildered. That night, sleep was a distant country she couldn't reach. The memory of his touch, of the raw need in his eyes, haunted her. Restless, she found herself walking the silent halls of the estate. As she passed his study, she saw the door was slightly ajar. A low sound from within, a pained murmur, made her freeze. Peeking through the crack, she saw him slumped in his chair, lost in a troubled sleep. His face was a mask of agony. And then, a single word tore from his lips, a guttural whisper dredged up from the very depths of his soul. "Mine." It wasn't a claim. It was a confession. It was a curse. It was the sound of a man seeing his own doom. And Anne knew, with a certainty that terrified her, that their simple contract had just become something far more dangerous. Chapter 7. The empathy of Aluna Kale's whispered word, mine, haunted the edges of Anne's thoughts, a ghost that refused to be banished. It had changed the texture of the air between them, charging it with a fragile, dangerous energy. Their contract, once a solid shield, now felt like fractured glass. As if to test those fractures, her duties as Luna began in earnest. She was no longer just a placeholder. She was an active participant in the life of a pack that had never truly seen her before. It was terrifying. It was exhilarating. Today, she sat beside Kyle on a raised dais, presiding over a pack dispute. Two families, the Hawthorns and the Briars, were locked in a bitter feud over hunting grounds. The Briars were old blood, powerful and arrogant. The Hawthorns were younger, their family hit hard by the last harsh winter, and their desperation was a palpable scent in the air. The pack expected a swift, harsh ruling from their alpha, one that would favor the powerful Briars. It was the political choice. It was the safe choice. Kyle listened, his face a mask of stone, weighing strategies and precedents. But Anne didn't see politics. She saw the pinched, hungry face of the Hawthorne matriarch. She saw the fear in the eyes of her eldest son. She remembered the gnawing ache of an empty stomach, the quiet shame of being overlooked. She knew this kind of desperation could curdle into something far more dangerous than a simple boundary dispute. When Kyle turned to her for the customary Luna's counsel, everyone expected her to defer to him, to nod silently. Instead, she leaned forward. "This isn't about lines on a map," she said, her voice quiet but carrying in the tense hall. "It's about survival. The Briars have strength, and the Hawthorns have skill in tracking smaller game the Briars often ignore. Forcing them apart weakens us all." She paused, then delivered her solution. "I propose a cooperative hunt for one moon cycle. Let them share the territory, share their skills, and share their bounty. Let them remember they are one pack, not two warring factions." A stunned silence fell over the hall. It was unheard of. An elegant solution rooted not in authority, but in empathy. Kale's golden eyes widened almost imperceptibly. He stared at her, truly seeing her, perhaps for the first time. He saw not the meek healer, but a leader. He nodded slowly. "The Luna has spoken. So it shall be." Later that evening, he found her in the estate's garden, the scent of moon petal flowers thick in the cool air. The unspoken things between them felt like a heavy cloak. "That was unconventional," he said, his voice a low, rough rumble that seemed to vibrate right through her. He stood close enough that she could feel the heat radiating from his body. "But it was wise. You showed them a strength I did not expect." The praise, so rough and reluctantly given, felt more intimate than any touch. It settled deep in her chest, a warm, glowing stone. It was a dangerously comforting weight, and it made the lie of their arrangement feel impossibly thin. What was happening between them? Chapter 8. The fire between them. A sliver of confidence planted by her success with the hunting dispute began to take root in Anne. It was a fragile, tender green shoot in the barren ground of her self-worth, but it was there. It made her stand a little straighter. It made her meet the eyes of the pack members who now nodded at her with a newfound respect. It also made her bold, foolishly, dangerously bold. The rogue attacks had left Kyle coiled tight with a fury he channeled into action. He summoned his war council, and now required to sit at his side. His plan was brutal and absolute. "A new training mandate," he announced, his voice leaving no room for argument. "Effective immediately. All wolves from the age of 10 summers will begin advanced combat drills. We were caught unprepared. It will not happen again." The old Anne would have pressed her lips together and faded into the background. The old Anne would have cowered before his cold, hard rage. But the woman sitting there now, the Luna who had stared down the formidable elders and united two rival families, could not stay silent. not when she saw the flicker of fear in his beta's eyes. "You're wrong," she said. The two words dropped into the tense silence of the room like stones into a still pond. Kyle's head snapped toward her, his eyes flashing with disbelief. Marius, his ever-stoic beta, froze completely. "What did you say?" Kyle's voice was a low, deadly warning. She stood up, her legs trembling but her resolve firm, because this was a mistake born of his pain. "I said you are wrong, Kyle. This is a decision made from fear, not strength. You will create a pack of soldiers, but you will shatter their spirit. You will make them hard, yes, but you will also make them brittle. They will break. I am making them strong enough to survive," he roared, rising to his full height, the force of his anger a physical blow. "You are teaching them that the only thing that matters is the fight," she countered, her voice rising with a passion she didn't know she possessed. "A pack is a family, not an army." Their argument was a wildfire, consuming the air in the room. He was the unmovable alpha. She was the unstoppable force. In a few quick strides, he was in front of her, backing her against the cold stone wall of the study. His body caged hers, his hands slamming into the wall on either side of her head. The scent of him, pine and ozone and pure, undiluted rage, overwhelmed her. "You forget your place," he growled, his face inches from hers. But his eyes weren't just angry. They were dark with a turbulent, confusing storm of emotion. And his gaze was fixed on her mouth. The anger between them twisted, morphing into something else. Something hot and electric. A magnetic current pulled them closer, the argument forgotten, replaced by a raw, undeniable need. He leaned in, and she felt her own lips part in anticipation, her body betraying every ounce of her sense. She wanted it. Goddess help her, she wanted this. Ahem. Marius cleared his throat, the sound as loud as a thunderclap in the charged silence. The spell shattered. Reality crashed back in. With a choked gasp, Anne shoved hard against Kale's chest and fled the room, her heart hammering against her ribs like a trapped bird. She wasn't running from him. She was running from herself. From the terrifying, exhilarating realization of how much she had wanted him to kiss her. Chapter 9, Deeper Than Politics. The Equinox Summit was a gathering of sharks, and Kale's estate was the blood in the water. Visiting alphas and their entourages filled the halls, their smiles thin, their eyes constantly assessing for weakness. Alpha Marcus, the oily wolf who had insulted her before, seemed to take a special pleasure in watching her, his gaze a constant, unnerving weight on her skin. He was looking for a way to provoke Kyle, to make him appear unstable before the other leaders, and Anne was his chosen target. During the grand welcome dinner, a tense affair filled with strained pleasantries, Marcus made his move. He rose, lifting his goblet in a toast that was pure poison. "To Alpha Kale," he began, his voice dripping with false sincerity. "And to his Luna." He let the word hang in the air, loaded with contempt. He turned his gaze on Anne. A bold choice, a commoner from the infirmary, a woman with no bloodline to speak of. It makes one wonder if the Great Blackwood Pack has fallen on such hard times that it must elevate the fragile and the broken. A collective gasp went through the hall. The insult was a direct public assault on Kale's judgment and Anne's honor. Anne felt the blood drain from her face, her old wounds ripped open for all to see. She felt small, exposed, just as he intended. But the effect on Kale was something else entirely. He didn't just get angry, he broke. A snarl ripped from his throat, a sound so inhuman, so full of guttural rage, that it silenced the entire room. In a blur of motion that was too fast for the human eye to track, he crossed the floor. He seized Marcus by the throat and slammed him against a massive stone pillar with a sickening crack. Kale's claws, long and silver sharp, shot from his fingertips, digging into Marcus's flesh. His eyes, they were no longer gold. They were the solid, terrifying black of his wolf, unthinking and primal. He was going to kill him. right here. He was going to break the most sacred law of hospitality and start a war, all because of an insult directed at her. And in that horrifying moment, Anne understood. This had nothing to do with their contract. This wasn't a political play. This raw, untamed, possessive fury ran deeper than any deal they had made. It was real. It was primal. It was terrifyingly, breathtakingly real. She was the only one who could stop it. Kale, her voice trembled, but it cut through his rage. Stop. At the sound of her voice, the beast in his eyes wavered. He froze, his claws still embedded in Marcus's shoulder, his entire body shaking with the effort of holding his wolf back. Slowly, his head turned, and his wild, black gaze found hers across the room. Seeing her, truly seeing her, seemed to be the only anchor that could pull him back from the brink. With a guttural roar of frustration, he released Marcus, who crumpled to the floor, gasping and choking. Kale stood there, chest heaving, his eyes still locked on hers. They were filled with a terrifying, chaotic storm of fury, regret, and something that looked so much like love it made her heart stop. That night, Anne's dreams were of him. Not of the cold alpha, but of a wild wolf, all heat and shadows and possessive power. She dreamed of his arms around her, his growls in her ear, and a feeling of being utterly, completely claimed. She woke up tangled in her sheets, gasping for air, her skin slick with a sweat born of equal parts terror and a deep, forbidden desire. The contract was a ruin. The lines were gone. There was only this dangerous magnetic force between them, and she was afraid it would either save her or destroy her completely. Chapter 10. The Poisoned Gift. Kale's violent defense of her had shifted something in the pack's collective consciousness. When they looked at Anne now, they saw not a temporary placeholder, but the woman who could leash their alpha's terrifying inner storm. This newfound respect was a fragile, unfamiliar cloak. She found herself tentatively offering opinions on supply routes, on caring for the pack's elders. And they listened. For the first time in her life, she felt a sense of purpose, a feeling of belonging that was both intoxicating and terrifying. But as her influence grew, so did the hatred of her enemies. She was no longer just an obstacle. She was a target. The gift arrived with the morning sun, presented by a messenger from a supposedly allied pack. It was a goodwill gesture, he'd said, to honor the new Luna. It was a shawl, woven from the finest wool and dyed the deep blue of a twilight sky, embroidered with silver thread in the pattern of constellations. Anne's heart gave a small, foolish flutter. A gift. Something just for her. It was a tangible piece of acceptance, and she craved that more than she dared to admit. Without a second thought, she draped it over her shoulders, the cool fabric a welcome weight. The beauty of it made her feel almost like a real Luna. For a few precious minutes, she allowed the fantasy to take hold. Then, the itching started. At first, it was a minor annoyance, but it quickly morphed into a searing, unbearable burn. It wasn't on her skin. It felt like it was in her skin, a fire racing through her veins. Her breath hitched. The room began to swim, the edges of her vision blurring into gray. This wasn't an allergy. This was an attack. The door to her chambers burst open, slamming against the wall. Kyle stood there, his eyes wide with a cold, absolute panic she had never seen in him before. He must have scented her pain, the chemical sharpness of the poison. In two long strides, he was at her side. He didn't need to ask what was wrong. He ripped the beautiful shawl from her shoulders as if it were on fire. On the pale skin of her arms and neck, angry red welts were already rising, angry and ugly. Wolfsbane, he snarled, his voice a low, guttural sound of pure hate, laced with silver. A slow-acting poison, designed to kill her quietly, to make it look like a sudden illness, a coward's weapon. As the pack healers rushed in, their faces grim, a defiant anger began to burn through Anne's pain and fear. They had tried to kill her. They saw her as something fragile, a pawn to be swept from the board. They were wrong. she would not be a victim in this dangerous game. As a healer worked a soothing balm onto her burning skin, Kale stood guard by her bedside, his fury a suffocating presence in the room. He leaned down, his face a mask of chilling resolve, his golden eyes blazing with a deadly promise. "This was Marcus," he whispered, his voice so low it was almost a prayer of annihilation. "He will not get away with it. I swear to you, Anne, no one touches you again." His vow was not just a promise of protection. It was the sacred oath of a coming storm. Chapter 11. The Beautiful Trap. The poison faded, but a cold resolve settled in its place. The attack had made one thing brutally clear. This charade was a matter of life and death. The 30 days of their contract were nearly at an end, and a deep, unnerving dread coiled in Anne's stomach at the thought of leaving. That feeling, that desperate, traitorous desire to stay, terrified her more than any assassin. She had to put the walls back up. She had to reestablish the boundaries of their deal before her heart was lost for good. She needed to remind him and herself that this was all temporary. She found him in his study, staring into the hungry flames of the hearth, a glass of amber liquid untouched in his hand. He looked like a king burdened by the weight of his crown. Taking a steadying breath, she stepped into the room. "Kyle," she began, her voice sounding far more businesslike than she felt. "We need to talk about the terms. The 30 days are almost over, about the funds you promised, and my departure." He didn't turn around for a long moment. When he finally did, the look in his eyes shattered her resolve. The cold, powerful alpha was gone. In his place was a man drowning in a private, soul-deep agony. "There are no funds, Anne," he said, his voice raw, broken. There was never going to be an after, the contract. Every word of it was a lie. The floor seemed to tilt beneath her feet. "What? What are you talking about?" He finally looked at her, and his golden eyes were filled with a desperate, pleading vulnerability. "The first time I saw you," he confessed, his voice barely a whisper, "in the infirmary, I knew. The moon goddess showed me. You are my mate." He took a hesitant step closer. "But I saw the walls around you. I saw the fear in your eyes. You were so determined to be invisible, and I knew. I knew if I came to you as an alpha claiming his mate, you would run. You would break. And my own nature." He trailed off, a shadow of some old, terrible memory crossing his face. "I was afraid of frightening you away, of breaking you myself." His confession was a torrent, the words tumbling out as if a dam had finally burst. "The contract was a trap," he admitted, his voice cracking with the sheer weight of his deceit. "A beautiful, desperate trap. It was the only way I could think of to bring you into my world. To keep you by my side long enough for you to see me, to trust me. I built it on a lie you would believe, that you were disposable, because it was the only way to get you to stay. I was hoping, praying, that one day you would choose me." He was standing before her now, the space between them humming with the monumental, terrifying truth. "You were never temporary," he whispered, his voice thick with unshed tears. "You were always mine. Rage, betrayal, and a dizzying, unstoppable wave of desire crashed over Anne. Every cold shoulder, every harsh word, every moment of distance, it had all been a lie. A lie designed to protect her from a truth he thought she couldn't handle. Their entire world was a sham, but it was a sham built not on contempt, but on a desperate, broken kind of love. Her first instinct screamed at her to flee. This was too much. This confession was a cage, more binding than any contract. She turned to run, to escape the suffocating weight of his heart. "Don't," Kyle pleaded, his voice shattering completely. She risked a look back, and she saw the mighty Alpha Kale, the feared leader of the Blackwood Pack, standing on the edge of utter ruin. He was hers to break, hers to save. The choice was a terrifying weight that could crush her entirely. Chapter 12, The Silver Scar Reeling. and spent the next day in a state of muted shock, avoiding Kale, the echo of his confession replaying endlessly in her mind. "You were always mine." The words were a brand on her soul, a chain she didn't know how to break and wasn't sure she wanted to. Their fragile, constructed world had been demolished, and she was lost in the rubble, unable to find her footing. The final day of the summit arrived like a death sentence, culminating in a grand feast in the Great Hall. It was the last performance. The air was thick with tension. Alpha Marcus, still simmering with humiliation from his failed assassination plot and Kale's public dominance, was coiled like a viper waiting for his moment to strike. He saw the distance between Anne and Kale, saw her inner turmoil, and knew this was his last chance to shatter them both. He rose from his seat, his voice cutting through the hall. "A final toast," he announced, his eyes glinting with malice. "To the Luna. We have all seen her supposed strength of spirit. We've seen how she can tame our fearsome Alpha Kyle." He paused, letting the silence stretch. "But have you ever wondered about the scars she hides?" Before Kale could react, Marcus moved with unnatural speed. He wasn't aiming to wound her with a blade. His weapon was far crueler. He lunged across the space between them, and his hand shot out not to strike her, but to hook into the high collar of her formal gown. With a vicious, tearing sound, the delicate fabric ripped away. Time seemed to slow. The gasp of the crowd was a distant roar. There, on the pale, smooth skin of her shoulder and neck, for all the alphas and their courts to see, was the scar. A puckered, silver-white mark. The undeniable, permanent brand of a violent rejection. A mark of ultimate shame in their world. Proof that another wolf had once claimed her and then cast her aside like trash. Her deepest secret, the source of all her pain, was laid bare for the world to mock. The sight of it, of her utter, soul-deep humiliation, broke something in Kale. It wasn't the controlled fury of before. It was a complete, catastrophic loss of control. A gut-wrenching scream, more animal than human, tore from his throat. His body contorted. The sound of bones snapping, of skin tearing, echoed through the horrified hall. It wasn't a smooth transformation. It was an agonizing, violent explosion. Where the alpha had stood, a beast now rose, a massive black wolf, larger than any natural creature, its eyes no longer gold or black, but a solid burning red. It was a being of pure, mindless rage. It saw nothing. It knew nothing. It only wanted to destroy. The room erupted into chaos. Wolves shifted. Guards drew silver blades. Screams echoed off the stone walls. Kale's wolf was lost, a force of nature that would annihilate friend and foe alike, destroying every alliance, every law, every last piece of his world. And Anne, stripped bare, her shame a physical weight, was forced to watch. This was her choice. Run from the pain, hide from the humiliation, and let him consume himself in the fire she had inadvertently lit. Or find a strength she had never, ever believed she possessed and walk into the heart of that inferno. Tears streamed down her face, hot against her cold skin. She looked at the monster he had become, for her, and a single, broken whisper escaped her lips, the absolute truth of her heart in that moment. "I'm not strong enough for this." Chapter 13. The Ghost of a Rose. The Great Hall was a ruin of chaos and fear, but in the aftermath, a chilling order was restored. Kale's beta, Marius, with a face like carved stone, had directed the pack's elite guards. With heavy, silver-laced chains and a grim, heartbreaking efficiency, they had subdued their berserk alpha. The beast was now caged in the stone-walled dungeons beneath the estate, a place reserved for the vilest of traitors. He was a danger to everyone, but most of all, to himself. Anne, wrapped in a simple cloak, felt like a ghost haunting the edges of the catastrophe she had caused. Marius found her huddled in a quiet alcove, her body still trembling from the aftershocks of her public humiliation. His expression was bleak, but his eyes held a sliver of desperate hope. "He is lost," Marius said, his voice a low, gravelly rumble of grief. The beast has him. We cannot reach him. The healers cannot get close. He paused, his gaze heavy. But when his rage peaks, he howls your name. He bowed his head, a gesture of profound respect that shattered her. Luna, I believe only you can reach him now. Her heart hammered against her ribs. Go to him? To that monster? Yet she couldn't refuse. Following Marius down the cold, damp steps into the dungeon, the air grew thick with the scent of wet stone and animalistic rage. Through the iron bars of a reinforced cell, she saw him. The great black wolf thrashed against the chains that bound him to the wall, snarling and clawing at the stone floor, completely lost in a mindless madness. But as she stepped into the torchlight, he went still. The frantic thrashing ceased. The massive head lifted and the burning red eyes focused on her. He was still a beast, but he knew her. A low, rumbling growl vibrated from his chest. Sensing the shift, Marius spoke softly from behind her. You need to know why he fights himself so hard. Why he pushed you away. He told her a story then, a tragedy whispered in the shadows of the dungeon. He spoke of Kale's first fated mate, a gentle healer named Lyra, a she-wolf with a laugh like wind chimes. They had been young, barely adults, their love a bright, burning flame. During a brutal rogue attack years ago, a younger, less controlled Kale had given himself over to his wolf's battle rage. In the bloody chaos, he had lost himself. And in that blind, unthinking fury, his wolf had struck down a threat too close to him, not realizing until it was too late that it was Lyra. He killed her, Marius whispered, the words heavy with old pain. He has spent every day since building a cage of ice around his heart, around his wolf. He pushed you away because he is terrified of his own love for you. He is terrified that the beast inside him will take you too. The truth was a punch to the gut. All his coldness, his restraint, his cruel rejections, they weren't because he saw her as worthless. They were because he saw her as precious. It was a twisted, desperate act of protection. His scars ran so much deeper than her own. Her pain was from a rejection. His was from a love so powerful it had destroyed everything he held dear. Compassion, fierce and overwhelming, washed away her fear. Ignoring Marius's sharp intake of breath, she took a step closer to the cell. She was close enough to feel the heat rolling off the wolf's massive body. Kale, she whispered. Trembling, she reached a hand through the cold iron bars. For the first time, willingly, she reached for the beast. The wolf flinched but didn't snarl. Ever so slowly, she laid her palm flat against the coarse fur of his muzzle. He was real. He was warm. And as her skin made contact, a low, mournful whine escaped his throat, a sound of such profound, heartbreaking loneliness. He leaned his great head into her touch, and for a moment, he was no longer a monster. He was just Kale. Chapter 14, Claiming Her Alpha. Kale remained trapped in the twilight between man and beast, a prisoner in his own body. The news of his rampage, however, had spread like wildfire. The visiting alphas, with a furious and bandaged Alpha Marcus at their head, smelled blood in the water. They invoked an ancient law, forming a tribunal to pass judgment on the alpha of the Blackwood Pack. Their demand was simple and brutal. Kale was too unstable to lead. They called for his abdication, or his execution. It was a political assassination disguised as justice. The Great Hall, the scene of the previous night's chaos, was now a makeshift courtroom. Kyle was led before them, bound in the same silver chains, a heavy iron muzzle clamped over his snout. He was forced onto his knees, a king made into a spectacle. He did not fight. He was silent. His golden eyes, flecked with a lingering feral red, were vacant, lost. Marcus made his case, his voice ringing with righteous fury as he painted Kyle as a mindless monster, a threat to the stability of all their territories. We saw his lack of control. He is a danger that must be put down. Just as the murmurs of agreement began to swell, the great doors of the hall swung open. Anne walked in. She wore a simple gray gown, the torn collar from the night before crudely stitched. She had made no effort to hide her rejection scar. It was a part of her, and she would no longer be ashamed. Head held high, she walked through the silent, parting crowd, her steps unwavering. She came to a stop directly between the Tribunal of Alphas and her chained mate. "You are wrong," she said, her voice clear and strong, echoing with an authority she had never before possessed. "You see a monster because that is what you wish to provoke. I see an alpha who was pushed past his breaking point protecting his mate, an alpha who reacted to a direct and vile assault on his Luna." She turned her gaze on Marcus, and it was as sharp as steel. "You speak of his lack of control, but you forget to mention that you poisoned me. You forget to mention that you publicly humiliated me. You attacked his fated mate in his own hall. What response did you expect? A polite disagreement?" She turned back to the stunned alphas. "His wolf is not a weakness. It is a testament to the depth of his heart. A heart that feels loyalty and love so fiercely that it is willing to burn the world down to protect it." She walked to Kale's side, uncaring of the low growl that rumbled in his chest. She knelt before him, placing a gentle hand on his cheek. The growl died in his throat. A flicker of awareness of the man she knew returned to his eyes. "I claim him," she declared to the silent room. "Not as a contract, not as a political shield. I claim him as my alpha, my mate." Looking into Kale's eyes, she whispered, for his ears only, "Come back to me, Kale. Please." Slowly, painfully, he leaned forward. In front of the entire tribunal, he pressed his muzzled face against her hand, a gesture of complete and utter surrender to her. Then he did something more. He pushed his head forward, nudging his muzzled lips against hers. It wasn't a kiss. It was a silent, desperate vow, a promise of an inferno witnessed by all. It was the moment a true Luna claimed her king. Chapter 15. The Unfinished Kiss. Anne's defiant stand had thrown the tribunal into chaos. Her fierce loyalty, her public claiming of Kale, had swayed the neutral alphas and even some of Kale's own wavering pack members. They saw a true Luna, and the political tide began to turn. That night, Kale was released from the dungeons and confined to his chambers, the beast within him finally receding, leaving the man exhausted, wounded, but lucid. The vacant look was gone, replaced by a deep, bone-weary sadness. She stayed with him, cleaning the chafing wounds left by the silver chains, her healer's instincts a comfort in the suffocating silence. All the lies and pretenses between them had been burned away, leaving only a raw, terrifying, and undeniable truth. The air was thick with it, a magnetic pull that was almost a physical force. The gratitude in his golden eyes slowly deepened into something else. Something hotter, more possessive, that made her skin tingle. "Anne," he rasped, his voice rough from disuse. His hand, still trembling slightly with weakness, came up to cup her jaw. His touch was hesitant, reverent. "You saved me from myself." "You would have done the same for me," she whispered, leaning into his touch, her own emotions a tangled mess of relief and a desire so sharp it was painful. He tugged her gently, urging her closer until she was sitting on the edge of the bed. The memory of their interrupted kiss, the one that had been born of anger and fire in his study, hung between them. This time, there was no anger. There was only this raw, desperate need. He pulled her down, and the slow burn promise he'd made in the great hall finally ignited. It was a kiss of beautiful desperation. It was explosive. All the years of his loneliness, of his guilt, of his tightly controlled longing came pouring out. It was a kiss of claiming, of surrender, of a love so fierce it felt like it could shatter bone. And she met him with equal fire, her own walls, her own fears, her own deep-seated belief that she was unworthy, all turning to dust and ash in the heat of his mouth on hers. It was everything. But then, just as the passion was about to consume them. A low, guttural groan tore from his chest. He shoved her away, the rejection so sudden it felt like a physical blow. He scrambled back on the bed, his eyes flashing with that terrifying red. "No," he gasped, his body trembling, his face a mask of self-loathing. "I can't. The wolf. It's too strong. It wants to mark you, to complete the bond. I can't control it when we, I'll hurt you, Anne. I'll lose control again, and I'll hurt you." He was terrified of the very passion she had just willingly surrendered to. The ghost of his past, the memory of Lyra, was a chasm between them that even this all-consuming kiss could not bridge. She was left on the floor, aching, furious, and utterly heartbroken. Crash! A sudden, violent commotion erupted from the corridor. Guards shouted in alarm, the sound abruptly cut off. Before Anne or the weakened Kale could even get to their feet, the chamber door burst open, ripped from its hinges. In the doorway stood not Alpha Marcus, but a half-dozen silent, masked rogues. They were the same ones from the forest ambush, their movements precise and deadly. They moved with terrifying efficiency. One lunged for Kale, while two others came for her. Anne screamed his name, but a cloth was shoved over her mouth, the sickly sweet scent of a sedative flooding her senses. Her vision swam. The world began to tilt and fade to black. The last thing she saw was Kale, roaring in helpless, animalistic fury, fighting desperately to get to her as the darkness finally completely took her. Chapter 16. The poisonous truth consciousness returned slowly, dragged up from a thick, syrupy darkness. The first thing Anne registered was the cold. It was a damp, seeping chill that seemed to emanate from the stone floor beneath her and the heavy iron manacles around her wrists. The second thing was the burn, a familiar, sickening fire. The chains were laced with silver, a constant weakening poison that sapped her strength and clouded her thoughts. She was in a cellar, the air thick with the smell of mildew and despair. Footsteps echoed on stone steps. A figure emerged from the shadows, and her blood ran even colder. It wasn't Alpha Marcus. It was Valerius, the wolf from her own pack who had first publicly called her unfit. His face, which had seemed merely arrogant in the torchlight of the ceremony, was twisted now into a mask of smug, triumphant hatred. "Awake, I see," he sneered, circling her like a predator. "Don't look so surprised. Marcus is a useful tool, but he has no vision. He just wanted power. I want to burn Kale's world to the ground. And you, little Luna, are the match. He will find me," she spat, the words tasting like ash. Valerius laughed, a cruel, sharp sound that echoed in the small space. "Oh, I have no doubt. In fact, that is the entire point." He crouched down in front of her, his eyes glinting. "You poor, naive thing. You still don't understand the game you're in, do you? You think this is a love story?" He then began to weave his tale, each word a carefully crafted drop of poison designed to find the deepest cracks in her soul. He told her Kale had orchestrated everything. The 30-day contract was real, he insisted. Kale knew his enemies were circling, and he needed a way to draw them all out into the open. So he devised a plan. Find a disposable, unknown she-wolf. Someone no one would miss. Elevate her, make her a target, and then watch to see who came to kill her. "You," he said, "were the perfect bait." "His protectiveness?" Valerius scoffed, his voice dripping with false pity. "An act. He had to make it look convincing, didn't he? How else would his enemies believe you were actually important to him? He never loved you. He used you. Just like that other wolf who gave you that pretty scar." The lie was a masterpiece of cruelty, because it fit. It explained Kale's initial coldness. It explained the contract, his public displays of possession, everything. Every piece of evidence could be twisted to support this monstrous narrative. Her fragile, newly built trust in him, in them, didn't just crack. It shattered into a million irreparable pieces. The hope she had just started to nurture withered and died. It was so much easier to believe this. It was easier to accept that she was a tool than to believe that an alpha as powerful as Kale could ever truly love someone so broken. Her deepest, darkest fear that she was, and always would be, disposable, was true after all. A cold, hollow numbness spread through her, more potent than the silver burning her wrists. She could feel the mate bond, the golden thread that connected her soul to Kale's. It was a warm, humming presence that had become her secret comfort, and now it felt like a brand of shame. With a surge of agony and white-hot betrayal, she focused all her pain, all her despair, on that connection. And she pushed. She severed it. She rejected him in her mind, in her soul, a spiritual blade that she knew would feel like a mortal wound in his. Chapter 17. The Severed Bond. He came like a storm. The heavy cellar door didn't just open. It was ripped from its hinges and thrown across the room with a splintering crash. Kyle stood there, framed in the doorway, a figure of pure, righteous fury. He was bleeding from a dozen different wounds. His clothes were torn, and his eyes, his beautiful golden eyes, were wild with a desperate, frantic light. He had cut a bloody path to find her. He had torn through Valerius's forces like a god of vengeance. "Anne," he gasped, his voice raw with relief. The sight of her, alive, made him stumble forward, his hand outstretched. But the woman who looked back at him was not the one he had lost. Her eyes, usually so full of hidden warmth, were cold and empty as a winter sky. When his fingers brushed her arm, she flinched away as if his touch were fire, scrambling back until the chains pulled her up short. "Don't touch me," she whispered, her voice devoid of all emotion. It was a dead, flat sound. "I know everything. It was all a lie. The contract, using me as bait, it was all real, wasn't it?" He stopped, his expression shifting from relief to utter gut-wrenching bewilderment. "What? Anne, no. That's what they want you to believe. Valerius, he's twisting things." "Is he?" she asked, a bitter, hollow laugh escaping her lips. "It all makes perfect sense now. Why you chose me, why you were so cold, it was all a performance." She lifted her head, and the emptiness in her eyes was a blade that sank deep into his chest. "I was never your Luna. Not really. I was just a pawn, a disposable piece in your great game to secure your power." Her rejection, so calm, so absolute, hit him with more force than any physical blow. The brilliant, furious light in his eyes flickered and died, extinguished by her words. The god of vengeance vanished, leaving only a broken, bleeding man. The strength that had carried him through an army of his enemies, the sheer force of will that had ignored his own grievous wounds, seemed to drain out of him all at once. He staggered, a hand going to his side, his breath coming in ragged gasps. He had fought his way through hell for her, only to be slain by the angel he had come to rescue. It was the moment of weakness Valerius had been waiting for. Emerging from the shadows behind a stack of barrels, Valerius lunged. He didn't waste his time on Anne. He moved with a snake's speed, a long, gleaming silver blade in his hand. Kale, distracted, heartbroken, turned too slowly. Valerius plunged the dagger deep into his side. A roar of pure, unadulterated agony ripped from Kale's throat as he collapsed to the stone floor. He was defeated. Not by the blade, not by the poison, but by the utter devastation of her rejection. Chapter 18. The Worth of a King. Kale lay on the cold stone, a pool of dark blood spreading out from beneath him. Valerius stood over him, panting, a triumphant, ugly sneer on his face. He kicked Kale's side, earning a pained groan. Anne was frozen, a spectator to a nightmare, her heart a block of ice in her chest. "See?" Valerius gloated, his chest puffed out with victory. "So easy to break. All that power, all that pride. Take away his precious little mate and he had nothing left. He was just an animal, thrashing in a trap." He looked at Anne, his eyes filled with contempt. "He really did love you, you know. That was the one beautiful flaw in his plan. and in mine. Anne stared at him, the words not quite making sense. He was supposed to let you go, Valerius continued, laughing as he paced. The original plan was for him to let Marcus's assassins kill you. A tragic death, a grieving Alpha. It would have given him the perfect excuse to wage a righteous war. He would have been a hero. He leaned down, his face close to hers, his breath foul. But he couldn't do it. At the last minute, he couldn't let his little bait die. He broke his own damn rules for you, you stupid, worthless girl. His love for you. That's what made him weak. That's what gave me this chance. He broke his own rules for you. The words sliced through the fog of her despair. They shattered the perfectly constructed lie with the force of a thunderclap. It wasn't Kale's cunning that had been the problem. It was his heart. His love for her hadn't been an act. It was the one thing that had ruined everyone's plans. It was the one variable no one, not even Kale himself, had accounted for. She looked at him then, truly looked at him, dying on the floor. For her. She saw the truth in the agony of his golden eyes, a truth so powerful and pure it burned away all the lies. And in that blinding flash of clarity, she finally saw her own deepest flaw. It wasn't the silver scar on her shoulder. It was the invisible one on her soul. Her absolute, stubborn refusal to believe she was worthy of a love this fierce, this consuming, this real. She had been so afraid of being disposable that she had made herself disposable. Her despair didn't just fade, it combusted, transforming into a white-hot, cleansing fury. This was her fault. Her lack of faith was the real poison. Her rejection was the blade that had truly brought him down. She would not let this be the end. She would choose to fight. For him. For them. For the tarnished, beautiful, and undeniable truth of their bond. Valerius raised his silver blade, preparing to deliver the killing blow to Kale. Now the Blackwood Pack and all its riches belong to me, he sneered. From her position on the floor, a sound ripped from Anne's throat. It wasn't a scream of fear. It was a guttural, furious snarl that echoed off the stone walls. A sound she had never made before. The sound of a Luna. Valerius froze, turning to look at her in shock. Slowly, she rose to her feet, the silver chains clinking. Her eyes, no longer empty, blazed with a power she had never known she possessed. You will not touch him, she vowed, her voice low and trembling with rage. I won't let him die for me. Chapter 19. The Luna's Call. Valerius stared, momentarily stunned by the raw, feral power radiating from the woman he had dismissed as a broken toy. That split second of hesitation was all Anne needed. With a grunt of effort, she swung her body, using the length of chain between her manacled wrists like a whip. The heavy iron cuffs crashed against a stack of barrels, sending them tumbling toward Valerius and forcing him to stumble back. She was no warrior, but in that moment, she was a shield. A living barrier between the man she loved and the wolf who wanted him dead. Ignoring the chaos, she closed her eyes, turning her focus inward. She reached for the golden thread of the mate bond, the one she had so viciously severed. It was faint, frayed, but still there. This time, she didn't push. She pulled. She opened the floodgates of her heart and poured everything she was into that connection. All her newfound belief, all her regret, all her fierce, unconditional love. She sent him the truth, that she saw him, all of him, the man, the Alpha, and the Beast, and she chose him. I choose you, she screamed in her soul. All of you. I am not letting you go. On the cold stone floor, something shifted within Kale. The agonizing rejection that had crippled him was suddenly replaced by a warm, brilliant flood of acceptance. It was a healing balm on a soul-deep wound. His wolf, the part of him he had caged and feared for years, the part he believed was an uncontrollable monster, felt her call. It felt her acceptance. It wasn't a command to be tamed. It was an invitation to be whole. the burning, mindless red in his eyes receded, extinguished by the pure, molten gold of his true spirit. He wasn't fighting his wolf anymore. He was finally, completely, one with it. Just as Valerius recovered and lunged forward, the cellar door exploded inward for a second time. Marius and a team of Blackwood guards stormed the room, their weapons drawn, their eyes blazing. They had tracked their alpha, arriving in the nick of time. Outnumbered and having lost his ultimate advantage, Valerius snarled a curse, threw a smoke pellet to the ground, and vanished with his remaining rogues into the ensuing confusion. The guards rushed to secure the area, their movements swift and efficient. But Anne only had eyes for Kale. He struggled to push himself up, his body trembling with pain and exhaustion, his gaze locked on her. He was weak, bleeding, but he was whole. The haunted look that had shadowed him for years was gone. As a guard unlocked her silver chains, she scrambled to his side. He reached for her, his hand covering hers. He looked at her, his expression full of a reverence and awe that stole her breath. "Mine," he whispered. The word was different now. It wasn't a desperate claim or a pained confession. It was a simple, profound statement of fact, a vow. She squeezed his hand, her own tears finally falling, hot and cleansing. "Yours." Chapter 20. Forging an alliance back at the estate, a fragile peace settled, but it was the quiet before a guaranteed storm. Kyle was recovering, his body healing with a shifter's speed, but his spirit was healing even faster, knitted back together by Anne's acceptance. The larger threat, however, had metastasized. Valerius had fled straight to Alpha Marcus. Together, they had consolidated their forces and were now openly calling for war, using the tribunal's records of Kale's instability as their righteous justification to seize his territory. The other alphas, the ones who had witnessed Anne stand, were caught in the middle, their neutrality a dangerous liability. Kale, against the healer's advice, called a war council. He stood before the wavering alphas, not just with his warriors, but with Anne at his side. He was still pale, a bandage visible beneath his tunic, and his weakness was plain to see. He began to speak, his voice strained with pain, trying to rally them with talk of treaties and strategy. Seeing him struggle, Anne felt a surge of protective fire. She gently placed a hand on his arm and stepped forward, no longer standing in his shadow, but beside him, as an equal. "Alphas," she began, her voice clear and steady, commanding the attention of the powerful shifters. "You speak of strength and stability. Let me tell you about the kind of strength Alpha Marcus and Valerius offer." She took a deep breath and laid her soul bare. She told them everything. The contract. The lie born of Kale's fear. The way her own past had been used to poison her against him. She pushed back the collar of her tunic, deliberately showing them the silver rejection scar. "They rule with deceit," she said, her eyes sweeping over the silent council. "They see love not as a bond, but as a weakness to be exploited. A lever to pry packs apart. They tried to break us by turning our hearts against each other because they believe that is the easiest way to conquer." She looked back at Kyle, her love for him a visible, palpable force. "They were wrong. What binds us together is not a weakness. It is our greatest strength. It is the reason we will not break." Her raw honesty, her fierce courage, and the undeniable power of the bond that now shone between her and Kyle was more convincing than any political argument. It was a display of a true united Alpha and Luna pair. One by one, the neutral Alphas stood, their expressions grim but resolute. "The Stone River Pack has gone too far," one declared. "You have our swords, Alpha Kale." "And ours," said another. "We will stand with the Blackwood Pack." As the council ended, the distant, rhythmic beat of war drums could be heard on the wind. The enemy was mobilizing. Kale pulled Anne into a quiet alcove, the air between them simmering with an energy that was no longer desperate, but deep and sure. "After this," he said, his voice thick with an emotion that transcended gratitude. "Whatever happens, no more lies. No more walls. He leaned down and kissed her, a deep, searing promise of the forever they would now have to fight for. Chapter 21, The Eve of Battle. The war camp was a sea of tense energy under a bruised twilight sky. The scent of steel, nervous sweat, and the damp earth hung heavy in the air. On one side of the valley, the banners of the Blackwood Pack and their newfound allies snapped in the wind. On the other, a dark, sprawling mass of warriors gathered under the cruel emblems of Marcus and Valerius. The final confrontation was hours away. This time, Anne was not hidden away in the infirmary. She moved through the camp, her presence a quiet, steadying force. She walked among the warriors, offering a cool cloth to a feverish young shifter, checking that the reserves of silver-tipped arrows were secure, and sharing a quiet word of encouragement with a grim-faced captain. The wolves of her pack, the ones who had once whispered about her inadequacy, now lowered their heads in a gesture of profound respect as she passed. She was not their Luna by blood or by contract. She had earned the title with her courage, her heart, and her unwavering loyalty. She saw Lyra, the young nurse who had once called her bitter, distributing bandages. Their eyes met across the bustling camp. Lyra's expression was one of pure, unadulterated awe. Anne offered her a small, genuine smile, a gesture of peace and forgiveness for the woman she used to be. The bitterness that had been her shield for so long was gone, burned away and replaced by a fierce-tempered resolve. She was no longer the woman who craved invisibility. She was a beacon in the coming dark. She had proven her worth not by standing behind the Alpha, but by standing for him. She embodied the pack's heart, its resilience, its unbreakable will to survive. Just as the first battle horn was being raised, she found Kale on a rocky ridge overlooking the enemy line. He stood like a statue, the wind whipping through his dark hair, his golden eyes fixed on the challenge ahead. She came to stand beside him, shoulder to shoulder. They were two halves of a whole, facing the darkness together. He didn't speak. He didn't need to. He simply reached out and took her hand, his strong fingers lacing through hers. His grip was sure, a silent promise that he would not let go. Across the valley, the enemy's horn sounded an ugly, brazen challenge. Kale squeezed her hand once, a final, unspoken acknowledgement. They looked at each other, a complete understanding passing between them in the charged silence. The fight for their territory, for their pack, and for their future was about to begin, and they would face it as one. Chapter 22. A Mark of Trust. The battlefield was a maelstrom of desperate courage and brutal violence. The air was a thick metallic soup of blood, sweat, and fear. Kyle, in the form of the great black wolf, was a force of nature at the heart of the chaos, a whirlwind of black fur and flashing claws. But he was being flanked. Alpha Marcus and Valerius, working with a vicious, coordinated assault, had finally trapped him. Valerius expertly threw a silver-laced chain, its heavy links wrapping around Kale's hind leg, biting deep. As Kale roared in pain and surprise, Marcus lunged, his own claws aiming for Kale's exposed throat. Trapped. Wounded. The familiar, terrifying specter of his past rose up to claim him. The trauma of his failure with Lyra, the deep-seated fear of his own unrestrained power, began to surface. A dangerous, bloody red tinge started to bleed into the pure gold of his eyes. He was losing control. He was on the verge of becoming the mindless beast again. From across the battlefield, where she had been directing healers and fighting with a desperate ferocity of her own, Anne saw it. She saw the shift, the flicker of red. And she knew. He was losing himself. Without a second thought, she ran. She sprinted into the deadliest heart of the battle, ignoring the blades and claws that flashed around her. She had no weapon. She didn't need one. She was his anchor. She threw herself between her mate and his attackers, a shield of flesh and bone. "You will not have him," she screamed, her voice a raw cry of defiance. Then she did the unthinkable. She turned her back on her enemies. She faced the massive, snarling, half-mad wolf that was her mate. The beast's chest was heaving, a low, guttural snarl tearing from its throat. Choosing absolute trust over a lifetime of fear, she exposed the soft, vulnerable column of her neck to him. "Kale," she said, her voice trembling but clear, a beacon in his inner storm. "Trust me. Claim me. End this. Now." It was the ultimate act of faith. It was a surrender that was, in fact, the final decisive act of war. She was giving him the one thing he had been terrified to take. She was inviting the beast to complete their bond, not in a moment of tender passion, but here, in the midst of his rage and bloodlust. For the great wolf, her total unconditional trust was a lightning bolt that shattered the ghost of his past. This was not Lyra, a victim of his rage. This was Anne, his partner, his equal, making a choice. His rage didn't just recede, it clarified, sharpening into a fierce, focused, and utterly controlled power. He was no longer a man fighting a beast. He was an alpha, whole, and complete. He leaned forward, and he bit her. It was not the savage, tearing frenzy he feared, but a swift, deep, and sacred act of possession. His teeth sank into the flesh of her shoulder, and the mate mark was sealed. A brilliant, explosive wave of power surged through the bond, flooding them both. His fears were conquered. Her worth was proven. Their bond was now unbreakable. A roar of pure, untainted power ripped from Kale's throat. He shattered the silver chain as if it were thread. With Anne now a whirlwind of fierce determination at his side, they were unstoppable. They turned on their stunned enemies, a perfectly united force of absolute loyalty. The battle was over in moments. Marcus was defeated, Valerius captured. As the fighting died down around them, Kale, exhausted and bleeding, shifted back to his human form. He collapsed into her arms, his head resting against the fresh, bleeding mark on her shoulder. The very symbol of their final victory. Chapter 23. The true Luna silence fell over the blood-soaked valley, a quiet broken only by the groans of the wounded and the weary sighs of the victors. The sun began to rise, casting long, golden fingers of light over the aftermath. The enemy forces, their alphas defeated, were laying down their arms, surrendering. The war was over. The wolves of the Blackwood Pack and their allies slowly began to gather. They were battered, bruised, and exhausted, but they were alive. Their gazes all fell upon the two figures at the center of the now quiet battlefield. Anne stood, strong and unwavering, with their alpha leaning heavily against her for support. Her gown was in tatters, her face was smeared with dirt, and on her shoulder, the fresh crimson bite mark of her claiming stood out as a symbol of her sacrifice and their salvation. Then, a single wolf, a grizzled old warrior Anne had only ever seen scowl, lowered his head. Another followed. Soon, in a silent, powerful wave, every single member of the Blackwood Pack, and then their allies, bowed. They were not bowing to their alpha. They were bowing to her, to the Luna who had walked into the fire, the quiet healer who had found the roar of a queen, the mate who had saved their leader not by taming his beast, but by trusting it. In their lowered heads, in their reverent silence, Anne felt the final, beautiful culmination of her journey. This was not a role she was trapped in. It was a place she had earned. She was not a political asset or a disposable pawn. She was chosen. She was essential. She was loved. Kyle, watching the scene through weary eyes, tightened his arm around her. His face was filled with a love so profound, so complete, it needed no words. The contract was a distant memory. The lies were ash. There was only this. Only them. Marius approached, his usual stoic expression finally breaking into a small, deep smile of relief and pride. "It is done, Luna," he said, and the title, once a hollow echo, now fit her perfectly. "Let's go home." Supporting each other, two souls scarred and broken and now finally whole, Kale and Anne turned their backs on the battlefield. Together, they began the long walk toward the rising sun, toward home. Chapter 24, A Promise of Forever. Dawn's gentle light filtered into the quiet of Kale's chambers, painting the room in soft shades of rose and gold. the scent of victory had been washed away, replaced by the clean aroma of antiseptic herbs. Anne stood before a long mirror, dabbing a soothing balm onto the new mark on her shoulder. It no longer pained her. A constant, gentle warmth radiated from it. A humming, tangible reminder of Kale's soul being permanently entwined with hers. He came to stand behind her, his own wounds now cleaned and bound. He placed his hands on her arms, his solid presence a comforting weight. For a long moment, they just stared at their reflections. Two battered survivors, their images scarred and weary, but their eyes shining with a light that had not been there before. His thumb gently stroked the new mark, the sacred, circular pattern of his teeth, a permanent brand of belonging. It sat directly over the faint silver-white lines of her old rejection scar, covering the symbol of her shame with a symbol of his devotion. 30 days, he said, his voice a low, soft rumble against her ear, filled with the memory of their strange beginning. That was the original deal. She saw it in his eyes in the mirror, the last lingering shadow of his old insecurity, the quiet question. Was this real? Was this forever? She turned in his arms to face him, to let him see the truth in her own eyes. The woman who craved invisibility, the girl who believed herself disposable, was gone. A queen stood in her place, a woman who had found her power not in a title, but in her own heart. 30 days, she whispered, her hand coming up to cup his jaw, her thumb tracing the line of his stubble. We're never going to be enough. A deep sigh of perfect, absolute contentment escaped him as he leaned his forehead against hers, his eyes closing. Will you give me forever, Anne? He asked, his voice thick with the emotion of a man who had been starved of hope for a lifetime. She didn't need words to answer. She rose on her toes and gave him her reply with a kiss, slow, deep, and infinite with promise. It was the taste of home, the feeling of peace, and the silent, sacred vow of their new beginning.